Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is July 11th, 2017, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Every EHR Wants to Rule the World. I told Kelly I can't sing, but our guest skeptic is Dr. Justin Morgenstern. He is an emergency physician and director of simulation education at the Markham Stouffville Hospital in Ontario. He's the creator of the excellent FOMED project called First 10EM. Welcome back to the SGEM, Justin.
You know, it's always a pleasure to be back cutting that KT window down with you, Ken.
Oh, cutting the KT window down. But tell us, how was the smock?
Well, you know, it just wasn't the same without you, Ken, but I really did have a fantastic time talking nerdy. Some EBM, some publishing, even some Bayesian analysis with some truly incredible people in Berlin.
It's not allergies. I'm kind of upset I couldn't attend SMAC this year. But you know what? I look forward to next SMAC, and it's not until 2019 when it'll be returning to Sydney, Australia.
Yeah, SMAC returns home, Australia. I wouldn't miss it for the world. The real question, Ken, is how are you going to get some of that famous Canadian homebrew all the way down under?
It's a good thing I have more than a year to figure out how to get some of that great Canadian FOMED goodness down under. Justin, this is another SGEM hot off the press and officially going to be the last SGEM for season number 5.
But Ken, everybody knows 5 is your favorite number. Personally, I think season 5 was the best yet. But what do you do now? Can you even count to 6?
I know that question has been out there. But yes, I can count to 6. What I do is I just start over again on my other hand. However, I don't want the SGEMers to go into withdrawal over the summer. They will be getting some special content in July and August as part of a new SGEM Extra series called Legends of Emergency Medicine. And I've already posted the first one with my EBM mentor, Dr. Andrew Worster, creator of the Best Evidence in Emergency Medicine, or BEAM.
Dr. Worster is truly a legend. I'm looking forward to hanging out with him at BEAM courses in Niagara Falls this September and Costa Rica in February.
So these SGEM extras will be some of my EM legends. But Justin, do you want to suggest anyone?
You know, there's just way too many incredible people out there. If I start listing off all the folks who have shaped my career, we'll never get to the episode. So let me just say one name, the legend, the reason that I'm a skeptic, the reason that I love evidence-based medicine. And no, sorry, Ken, I'm not talking about you, but you know the name, Dr. Jerome Hoffman.
Yes, the original skeptic. Well, stay tuned, Justin and SGEMers. I have a sneaking suspicion that Jerry Hoffman will turn out to be one of my legends of emergency medicine. But Justin, let's get this show started with a case.
All right, so you're working a very busy shift in the emergency department. Your first patient was involved in a motor vehicle collision, and you pull out that MD Calc app to review the Canadian CT head rule with your residents.
And the second patient is an elderly lady presenting via EMS after a ground level fall in C-spine precautions. This time, you review the Nexus criteria for C-spine imaging with your resident.
The third patient just got off a long flight and is short of breath. Once again, you find yourself on MD Calc, this time teaching Wells criteria for PE and the PERC rule.
Your resident is very grateful for all the teaching, but asks, "We seem to be spending a lot of time looking up decision instruments. Wouldn't it just be easier if these tools were part of the electronic health record, since we're already inputting all this patient data into the EHR anyways?"
And you think to yourself, interesting. I wonder what the impact of integration of these rules into the EHR would have on CT ordering in my group.
All right, well, let's give the SGEMers some background information. Usage of CT scanning has increased more than 20-fold since the 1980s, and although CT is certainly a valuable tool, it is likely overused in emergency medicine. CT has downstream harms including radiation, incidental omas, overdiagnosis, financial costs, and negative impact on emergency department throughput.
Numerous clinical decision rules, such as the Canadian CT head rule, the Nexus C-spine tool, the PERC rule, and the Wells criteria, have been developed to help guide appropriate imaging.
However, uptake and appropriate use of these tools are not universal. These authors question whether integration of clinical decision support tools into the ordering system of the EHR would influence CT usage rate. So, Justin, what's the clinical question?
So, does deploying a novel, evidence-based, electronic health record integrated clinical decision support tool influence overall utilization of three specific high-cost CT imaging studies, the head, the C-spine, and PE?
And what's the reference?
So, this is Bookman et al. Embedded clinical decision support in electronic health record decreases use of high-cost imaging in the emergency department. It was in Academic Emergency Medicine, July 2017.
Let's do the PICO population.
So they looked at 163 attending-level emergency physicians at five emergency departments. One of them was academic. There were four community sites. There were two really large urban sites, two smaller urban sites, and one rural site.
And what they did was they excluded community sites that both the attending and the advanced practice provider saw the patients. What was the intervention?
So they looked at a new clinical decision support tool that was integrated right into the EHR. And this tool integrated the Canadian CT head rule, the Nexus C-spine rule, the Wells criteria, and the PERC rule.
And so what did they compare this intervention to?
So they looked at the baseline level of CT usage during a six-month period before the tool was integrated into the EHR.
And then what was their outcome?
So they were looking at overall ordering of the non-contrast CT head, CT C-spine, and CT pulmonary angiogram.
Well, now it's our pleasure to welcome Dr. Kelly Bookman, the lead author of this study, to the SGEM, because this is an SGEM hot off the press. Now, Kelly is a board certified in emergency medicine and medical informatics. She's the medical director and associate professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at the University of Colorado. Kelly is also the Senior Medical Director of Implementation and Informatics at UC Health Emergency Service Line. Welcome to the SGEM, Kelly.
Well, thank you for having me. It's quite a mouthful to try to call out all of those things that I do, but I am also an epic physician builder, which I think will be kind of fun to talk about.
Yeah, I noticed that. You are an epic physician builder. What does that mean?
Well, it all depends on how you want to look at it. In general, I am an epic physician builder. However, what it really means is that I am a thorn in the side of all of the analysts who have created our EHR to be difficult, and my job is to try to tell them, yes, we can, when they say, no, we can't optimize it.
Well, can you tell the SGEMers, what got you so interested in studying clinical decision support tools and EHRs?
Well, sort of goes back to what I just said about becoming an epic physician builder, to be honest with you. Really, I think that an EHR should be our tool that helps us deliver better care. And right now, a lot of folks, I think, really consider the EHR an impediment to delivering the care that they want to deliver. So really, I wanted to figure out how to put the tools that we all want to use to help us standardize and bring best evidence into our actual workflow.
And I understand before rolling out your new EHR, you got a hold of the ZDog MD video that discussed this in a very fun way. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's true. So part of what I do when I do rollouts of Epic is try to make sure that people understand that I am one of you. My job is to help you to understand how an electronic health record can help you. One piece I used was showing the ZDog and getting a lot of laughs and having everybody get comfortable with me. So I'm not the enemy. I'm actually here to help them.
Well, I think that's an excellent example of edumacation, not trying to make a distinction between education and entertainment, like Marshall McLuhan always said. But let's get the author's conclusions. And you're the author. So what were the conclusions to your paper?
So our overall conclusion was that embedded clinical decision support is associated with decreased overall utilization of high-cost imaging, especially among higher utilizers. It also affected low utilizers, which increased their usage consistent with improved adherence to the guidelines, but that effect didn't offset the overall decreased utilization for CT brain or CT C-spine. So our conclusion overall was integrating CDS into the provider workflow promotes usage of validated tools across providers and can standardize the delivery of care and improve compliance with evidence-based guidelines.
Thank you. All right, Justin, let's go through the quality checklist for observational trials. Did the study address a clearly focused issue?
Yes, it did.
Did the authors use an appropriate method to answer their question?
Unsure. I mean, a control trial would be the ideal.
Was the cohort recruited in an acceptable way?
Yes.
Was the exposure accurately measured to minimize bias?
Yes. So all the providers were forced to go through the clinical decision tool before an order could be submitted, although they were allowed to ignore its advice.
Question 5. Was the outcome accurately measured to minimize bias?
Yes.
Have the authors identified all important confounding factors?
Probably no.
Was the follow-up of subjects complete enough?
Yes.
How precise are the results?
The confidence intervals are relatively small.
And do you believe the results?
Yes.
Question number 10. Can the results be applied to the local population?
Now, we're unsure about this. Even within their own results, we see different effects depending on how many CTs you were ordering before the intervention. The impact of integration of CDS tools into EHRs will probably depend on your baseline usage of these tools.
And the last and final question, do the results of this study fit with other available evidence?
Unsure. Prior implementation studies of clinical decision support tools have sometimes shown decreased usage of imaging. But other times, we've actually seen increased imaging usage. In fact, the first big implementation study of the Canadian CT head rule by Dr. Ian Steele himself demonstrated an increase in CT use by 13% after the rule was instituted.
All right, let's go through the key results. There were a total of over 230,000 patient visits during the study period. There was a decrease of approximately 6% in targeted CTs ordered during the period after the intervention. So Justin, what was the primary outcome?
So they saw that the use of CT head and CTC spine went down, although CTPA was unchanged.
Well, let's drill down into the details there a bit. So talk to me about the CT head.
So CT head usage was decreased by 10%, speaking relatively. So it went down from 7.3% before the intervention to 6.6% after.
All right, and how about CTC spine?
CTC spine also went down by 6% relatively. This was only 2.1% before to 2.0% after.
And how about the CTPA?
And as we said, CTPA was unchanged 1.5% in both time periods.
Okay, they also did a post hoc subgroup analysis and they looked at the change in CT usage as compared to baseline utilization. Can you give us some of those details?
Yes, this is really interesting, but probably not surprising. If you, at baseline, were a high user of CT, when they put in this decision support tool, your usage went down. If at baseline you were a low user of CT, your usage went up.
All right, well, now it's time for that favorite section. Yes, it's the Talk Nerdy section. And Kelly, we're going to talk a little nerdy with you, and we have 5 questions to help us understand your study. Are you ready to go? And do you have your nerdy glasses on?
In fact, I do have my nerdy glasses on, and I am a data geek, so I love talking nerdy.
Well, Justin, you have the first of the 5 questions.
So this was a before and after observational study. 2 out of the 3 CT modalities had a statistically significant decrease over the study period. Now, you correctly state that in the paper that this was an association only. Could there not be other confounding factors besides the embedded CDS tools responsible for the changes observed?
Absolutely, and it's a great question. Part of what we wanted to look at was something that we couldn't turn on and turn off, so that's why we ended up doing it as an observational study without specific control groups. That said, we all know that the Choosing Wisely campaign has been going on for the last couple of years, and we describe that as we have multiple specialties, including emergency medicine, join the Choosing Wisely campaign, that we've seen some flattening out of the overutilization curve. However, in 2014, they were still describing these 3 CTs, which are high-cost imaging, as overutilized modalities. So yeah, it could be that some of the other national initiatives helped to drive down the utilization of these high-cost imaging tools.
So when we're looking at observational studies, the big concern we always raise is that the lack of control group to compare to the intervention makes the study a little bit more difficult to interpret. Can you comment on that, Kelly?
Absolutely. Actually, when we conceived of this study, we wanted to do a very sophisticated version of using a control group and rolled it out as a step wedge design such that it turned on at one region. And then 3 months later, we turned the same intervention on and so on and so on so that we could use the previous region as a control for itself, ultimately for lack of sophistication on my personal part. We ended up not being able to really do the step wedge study, but we were looking to do it as a control. So I agree, it makes it a little bit less robust to interpret.
Well, with a control group, it would have been epic.
Absolutely.
So the second question was the appropriateness of the scans. What is the right number of scans? Without clinical information, how can we know if the scans were appropriate or not? Was the increase in scans among low users a good thing or a bad thing? And were there more misses associated with the decreased CT rate?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a great question and one that came up as we were thinking about how we wanted to look at the studies, right? Ultimately, you want to look at outcomes. Did we increase our ability to capture positive findings while we decreased the utilization of these tools? What we did show on a post-hoc analysis is that we didn't increase the rate at which we found disease using these tools. So that is a next step in trying to look at whether embedding clinical decision support into the EHR actually helps. But my thought was, as we were thinking about how to do this study, was these tools we chose were already validated tools. So the idea is if you use a previously validated tool and therefore decrease the utilization, by definition, you should be improving your outcomes. But you're right, we did not study that here.
So question number three is a common theme. Is it absolute or is it relative? So your results are presented as relative numbers. The absolute changes are actually less than 1% for some of these changes. Why did you decide to use relative rather than absolute numbers?
It's a good question. I think that we present risk ratios, and already we've kind of gotten away from what we as frontline users can wrap our heads around. What we want to know is, you know, how many of these, count them, how many of these CAT scans are we decreasing? So we're already a little away from that by using the relative risk score. And I thought it would be easier to understand that we decreased by the risk of getting this study by 6% or by 10%. So that's why I presented it this way. It would be good for us to go back. And I think we talked a little bit about of the 230,000 studies that were done, we decreased by over 6,000 CAT scans that were done. So to help us, you know, frontline docs think about that, that's a pretty big decrease. So I think it's clinically relevant.
All right. And so whether these are absolute or relative, there's a statistically significant difference here. But the question is, do you think that these changes here represent clinically important patient-oriented outcomes?
So in my opinion, yes. So again, sort of as we go down by multiple thousands of CAT scans that we are performing, we are decreasing the radiation that we give to patients. We are decreasing cost to patients. We are improving our throughput by doing few of those. So to me, as a frontline doc, I think it's clinically relevant.
All right, question number four, and this talks about qualitative methodology. And as we were preparing for this podcast, my 18-year-old son, Ethan, shared a great article with us bemoaning the dominance of quantitative methodology at the expense of other study types. I notice your study was originally a mixed method with an incorporated qualitative analysis. Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. So one of the things that we were trying to do was not only simply measure this quantitative piece of whether or not we could decrease high-cost imaging, but we also wanted to look at how do you roll out a quality initiative across multiple sites, and what are the implications of change management and the way that you talk to folks about how you're going to manipulate their workflow, et cetera. So we actually did do pretty significant qualitative analysis where we did surveys and we sent people out to talk to the frontline, not only doctors, but nurses and other frontline staff about their perceptions of this study, and that is another paper that will be coming. But at this first presentation, we were asked to exclude the qualitative piece from the quantitative piece.
And there you go, quantitative over qualitative.
Every time.
So question number 5 is about hypothesis generating subgroups. So you report some post hoc subgroup analysis that show different effects of the intervention depending on the baseline usage of the levels of the physicians. High users of CT seem to lower their CT ordering, but lower users of CT ordered more CTs. Do you have plans to explore this finding further?
Absolutely. All right. One of the first things that comes to mind is this just regression to the mean. And I think that the answer to that question is because we saw a bigger decrease in high utilizers than we did increase in lower utilizers, I think it helps to offset the idea that this is regression to the mean. But I think this is really interesting, and I'd like to sort of use this to build on thinking about how we had a goal of decreasing variability. I mean, the reality is we showed a decrease, but what we really wanted to show was that embedded clinical decision support works. And I think that what we show here because of this is not a regression to the mean, but rather we show that people responded to the CDS and we changed behavior by embedding it right into their workflow.
And I think that's so important because decrease or increase doesn't matter. What we want is the best possible patient care.
Absolutely. That I agree completely.
Well, those are the 5 nerdy questions we had for you, Kelly. Is there anything else about this study you think the SGEMers should know?
For me, this was our first foray into trying to work with the concept of embedding clinical decision support directly into the workflow. I am absolutely passionate that clinical decision support should be delivered at the right time to the right person for the right reason. And I think we all are going to have EHRs, and I think we should be able to use our EHRs to help drive standardized best practice. So this was my very first foray. I was so excited when I came back as an Epic Physician Builder to even begin to think about something like this. And so as a bit of a preclude, we have now become much more sophisticated and have successfully embedded entire clinical pathways into our electronic health record so that we can drive providers to using the pathways, and we can actually prevent one of these hard stop tools from coming up. So when you use a pathway, it's right in your workflow. Before you even get to the place where you place an order, you actually are presented the tool, you interact with the tool, and then you don't ever see any kind of a hard stop interruptive alert with all of those extra clicks that everybody hates. So we are doing that now, and there will be yet another paper coming out so that you guys can see it.
Oh, I look forward to reading that paper. And I'm glad you brought up the frustration of clicks, because I think it was a paper a few years ago that talked about for every 8-hour typical emergency busy shift, it was something like 2,000 or 3,000 clicks. And we want to get away from that frustration of clicks. So if it can be more intuitive and you can integrate it into the actual clinical decision support tool into your workflow, I think that would be really, really helpful and avoid a lot of frustration about EHRs.
Absolutely. And people also hate the hard stops or those alerts that come up and thou shalt stop right here what you're doing and start clicking more. So what the pathways allow you to do is seamlessly go through your thought process and use the clinical decision support. It's phenomenal.
So you're anti-pop-up.
I am anti-unnecessary clicks and hard stop alerts.
All right, Justin, can you comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusion?
So we agree that clinical decision support tools embedded into an EHR is associated with a decrease in CT utilization in this study. But the generalizability of these results remains to be seen.
Can you give us a bottom line?
So embedding clinical decision support tools into EHRs is associated with an impact on CT utilization, but we need to know if it improves patient-oriented outcomes.
And can you give us a case resolution?
So you discuss this fascinating study with your resident and your department chief who happens to be walking by, and you agree that although EHR-embedded CDS tools are probably not ready for generalized use, it would make a fantastic resident research project.
All right, and let's talk about how we can incorporate this paper and apply it clinically. And while this is a very interesting study in an area we're sure to see a lot more research, EHRs are here to stay. And it would be great if we could harness the power to help make better decisions for our patients. However, for a variety of reasons, such tools are not ready for general use just yet.
Well, Ken, I just want to say that it is a little bit frustrating to talk about clinical decision support not being ready to be embedded into the EHR, because we've really moved on from sort of this initial clunky integration that we used for this particular study. And now with our pathways, it is so seamless and it is working really well. I really look forward to sharing this with everybody else so that they can really see what you can do with the power of embedded clinical decision support.
Well, we look forward to seeing that article being published in AEM, and we'll be happy to review it when it comes out. But that's one of the limitations with regards to, knowledge translation. It makes me think of that famous Joe Lex statement that if you want to know how we practiced medicine 2 years ago, read a good journal article. And that's what we've done today. We've critically appraised a good journal article, but we have to acknowledge that it is a couple years out of date. And so we look forward to a new hot off the press article from your group. Justin, what are you going to tell your patient?
So I'd say there's been a really interesting new study on integrating clinical decision support tools into the computer to help doctors make the best possible decisions about CT usage. Although we don't have an electronic health record system like that where I'm working, let me pull up one of those tools on an app on my smartphone so that we can review your risk together and make a shared decision about the most appropriate care for you.
All right, it's time for the Keener contest. And last week's winner was Magali Collier. And I already told her in advance that I would mispronounce her name. She's from Belgium, and she knew the famous physician was Virchow, who first recognized that clots in the pulmonary artery originate in the venous system. Justin, what do you got this week?
So, well, Ken, we reached out to our clinical decision tool guru, Dr. Ian Steele, and we asked him, what clinical decision tool in emergency medicine had been the most validated?
Oh, good one to reach out to him. And I'm glad you used the word tool and not rule. Well, if you know the answer, hint, hint, it's from that group in Ottawa, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive the last Cool Skeptical Prize for season number 5. And now we have Corey Heinz to remind us about the SGEM Hop process.
All right, SGEMers, don't forget to check out the podcast on the SGEM website, Twitter, and Facebook. Dr. Bookman will be reading and responding to your comments and questions, so be sure to engage. The best comments will be published in Academic Emergency Medicine. Speaking of Academic Emergency Medicine, subscribers can get CME for this podcast and article. Go to the AEM website and find the link on the left-hand side for CME. Log into the Wiley CME portal, search for the article, and answer 5 questions to claim your CME.
Thanks, Justin, for being on the last SGEM episode this year. Its ongoing mission is to cut the knowledge translation window down from over 10 years to less than 1 year using the power of social media. The ultimate goal of the SGEM is for patients to get the best care based on the best evidence.
It's been an incredible 5 years. I've learned a lot. Congratulations, Ken. I can't wait for season 6 and some more literature hot off the press.
And thank you, Kelly, for discussing your research on embedding CDS tools into EHRs with the SGEMers.
It was my pleasure.
So as an epic physician builder, are you working on a way to jack into our brains, like in the movie The Matrix, and the doctors will be able to say, I know the Wells criteria?
Don't you know it? Wait for the stuff that you see on the pathways. We're jacking right into everybody's brain.
Well, as our guest skeptic, can you give the SGEM tagline?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next season.